All right, Rabbi Say, good morning. Good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's share. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Kislev, Haba Alinu Letova, Allison and Adam Steinmetz, in memory of Adam's grandfather, Rabbi Sheldon Steinmetz, Harav Shlomo Tzvi, Ruvain Ben Shimon, Zichron Livracha, in honor that his neshama shav in Aliyah, he should be a Melech Yosef for his children, his grandchildren, and his 34 great-grandchildren. Incredible. Sammy and Malka Esterson, in memory of their parents, Ludwig Stiefel, Yitzchok Leib, Ben Aaron HaKohen, Sarah Rachel Bas Baruch Avram, Hinda Bas Henech Ephraim, and in memory of their dear family friend, Staff Sergeant Naftali Yonah Gordon, Hashem Yikom Damo, who fell in battle in Gaza on Erev Hanukkah 2023. Paul and Kathy Pollack, in memory of Paul's sisters, Leah Bas Shmuel, and Zachrini Shulamis Bas Shmuel, and Esther Bas Zecharia, all of whom were niftar during the month of Kislev. And our Daf Yomi sponsors for today, Ayal and Sarah Steinberg, in the schus of a continued refuah for Shulamis Chana Bas Susha, and Emir Hashem, for an enduring refuah for all of Klal Yisrael. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamos Av and Aliyah, the families in the Chama, all those who need refuah, Shavuot together with Kol Cholei Yisrael, make this a month of nisim and niflaos for all of Am Yisrael. Well, so with that, let us begin. Today's daf is Samech Ches 68. We are picking up in Meretz Hashem on Samech Zayin Amud Beis 67b. We left off at the Tashma, which is 2, 4, 6, 8 lines down from the top. So Tashma, Chatos Vosvos. Remember, we went yesterday into these very interesting cases about these two women, Rachel and Leah, who bring a variety of karbanos into the Beis HaMikdash, bird pairs into the Beis HaMikdash, give it to the Kohen, some with specificity, some without specificity, and then again, I'll say it, the ensuing karbanic chaos that occurs afterwards. It says, Gemara Tashma, Chatos Va'olos Tuma Mufureshas. What's the case? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi's right across. Chatos Va'olos Tuma Mufureshas. Rashi then quotes the rest of the Gemara, but let's go into Rashi itself. So ultimately, there were two women, Rachel and Leah, who brought together collectively three pairs of birds. Now, interestingly enough, each of them needs something a little bit different. So the Gemara says, "Zu tzricha ola v'kan shalim." So one of the women, we'll call her Rachel, requires an ola and a bird pair. Achas chatos v'achas ola. And again, in that bird pair is one chatos, one ola. Dahinu shtei olos v'chatos. So again, so collectively, Rachel requires two olos and a chatos. V'zu and Leah, v'zu tzricha shtei chatos v'ola. And the other woman, Leah, requires two chatos and an ola. And what happens? Pirshu echa min akidim. So they specified regarding one of the bird pairs. I'm just reading Rashi. Pray the ola lazu, pray the chatas lazu. In one of the bird pairs, they said, okay, this pray that this bird will be an ola for Rachel, this bird will be a chatas for Leah. Ve'echa min akidim inichus tuma, one of the bird pairs, they didn't specify at all. Ve'pirshu eza pray the chatas, eza pray the ola. Ve'gimel pirshu pray the zu, ola pray the zu chatas, aval shemos bailam lones parshu. And the third bird pair, they designated which bird is which, but they did not designate which bird is for whom. Okay, that's the case. So what happened? So it says the Gemara, Asa kula lamala mechza kasha mechza mepasal. So if the Kohen offered all of the birds up lamala, right above the red line, then ultimately, again, half of the birds are good, half of the birds are not good, which means half of the birds ultimately will count as ola, right? And the other half will be invalid. The kulan lamata, ultimately, again, if you offered all of them below the chota sikra, below the red line, then mechza kasher mechza pasal, same thing. Below the red line, half of them could count as chatas, and half of them would have to be invalid. Chesya lamala v'chesya lamata, if he did half of them above, half of them below, inak shera, elastuma. The only bird pair that is kasher is ultimately again the unspecified pair. Umischalekas bein ehen. And ultimately again it is divided. In other words, each woman gets allocated one bird. Ve'ilu mifurashin lo. But yet again, the delineated pair does not count. Now, Bosin, I remember again, what's the backdrop to all of this? The backdrop to all of this is the statement of Rabbi Yoshua. Remember again, this is Rabbi Yoshua from our Mishnah, who disagreed with Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yoshua was of the understanding, the Gemara said, that when you go ahead and you take an olas ha'of, right, and you go ahead and essentially you treat it in every way like a chatas ha'of, which means you're shechting one simen, or I should say, You're sprinkling it below the red line. Procedurally, you're doing everything like a chatos. What happens? What happens? The moment you cut that first simen, the moment you do malika on that first simen, it has transformed into a chatos. This was the groundbreaking chiddush of Rabbi Yoshua. So that's the backdrop to all this. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Va'amai. Nihi nami da'ola karva lamata. Timshach v'tehavi chatos ha'of. So the Gemara says, in all of these cases, I don't understand. Even if the Kohen did offer up the olos, lemata, below the chot ha'sukkah, below the red line, based on what Rabbi Yoshua taught us, halacha l'maisa, the olos should be transformed into chatos. Granted, it can't count as an ola, but still every single ola that is offered up lemata should be transformed into a chatos. So maybe you'll say, well, maybe this price just simply doesn't reflect the view, or this Mishnah doesn't reflect the view of Rabbi Yoshua. The Gemara says, no, it's not going to work, and I'll tell you why. Mimatzis amr haki, can you possibly say this? After all, the Gemara says, look at the rest of it. Tashma, ha'isha sha'amra, if a woman said, hare alai kan im ele zahar. This is an interesting case. So a woman said, I hereby commit myself to bring a kan. Kan means a bird pair. In this case, it's a pair of olos. I hereby commit upon myself to bring a pair of olos if I give birth to a baby boy. Okay? Mazel tov. She gives birth. Yalda Zachar. So now she gives birth. I will say, I remember again, when she gives birth, what's going to end up happening over here? Yalda Zachar. Mevia Shtekinim. She has to bring two bird pairs. Achas l'nidra v'achas l'chovasa. So she has to bring two bird pairs. Why two bird pairs? One bird pair ultimately because she made a neder, that if I have a boy, I'm going to bring a pair of birds. And ultimately, again, the other for her obligation. What's her obligation? As a yoledes. As a yoledes, what is she obligated to bring? A chatos and an ola. So essentially what this woman ends up bringing really are three olos and one chatos. Two bird pairs, but comprised of those four birds are three olos and one chatos. So watch this, same case. Nasnas on the Kohen. So if she, once she goes and she gives over to the Kohen, HaKohen Tzarech La'asosan Shalosh L'malo V'achas L'mato. So again, obviously, what's the procedure? The procedure is three of the birds are to be done above, i.e. Olos, and one to be done below. Good. Lo Asa came. What if the Kohen didn't do this? Elo Asa Shtayim L'malo U'beiz L'mato. Let's say the Kohen didn't do this. Instead, he went ahead and he did two above and two below, right? Velo nimlach, and he did not consult her about this. So what's the halacha? Tzricha shatavi od prey da achas. V'takri vena lemala mimin echas. So assuming ultimately, again, it's all the same type of bird, because remember, again, I will say, when it comes to these bird pairs, you do have a choice as to what type of bird you bring. It's a tar o ben yona. It's all right. It's a pigeon or a turtle dove. So you do have the opportunity to choose. So assuming it's all the same type of bird, what's the halacha? She has to bring another bird that's offered up as an ola. But ultimately, again, if she brought from two different bird types, tavi shtayim. Ultimately, again, she has to bring two birds. The Gemara says, fine. The Gemara says, Perisha Nidra. But ultimately, again, if she explicitly articulated which birds are which, she's Mefarish her Neder, Tzvicha Lahavi Od Gimel Predin, Mimin Echad. Assuming that it's ultimately, again, the same type of bird, Halach Lamais, she has to bring another three birds to make up for her obligations. Umi Beis Mimin, but if it's two different types of birds, Tavi Dala. So this is just all the different variations. Kava Nidra. What if halacha l'maisa, kava nidra, she established her neder? In other words, she specifically, Rashi says over here, that kava nidra, ultimately again is the case, lahavi imchovasa sha'amra hare alai kan, lavio imchovasi upershasa ve'eni odas ma'persha. She articulated, but then she's unsure exactly what she articulated. Top of Samechas 68a, tzricha shetavi od chamesh preidin l'malla mimin echad. So if it's all one type of bird, she would have to bring another five birds in order to satisfy her obligation. Umi beiz minin, but if it's two different types of birds, ultimately again, tavi sheish. She would have to bring six more birds in order to satisfy all the possible variations. Nas nasan lekoin, ve'eni yoda'as man nasna. If she gave it to the coin, but she's unsure what she gave over. Halacha coin va'asa. She right, the coin went and offered up the birds. Ve'eni yoda'a ma'asa. And the coin himself, so we'll say, this case is like the perfect storm. She's not sure what she gave him. He's not sure what he did. So the Gemara says, what's the halacha? Tzricha lahavi dalid preidin linidra ushtayim lechovasa. She has to bring four more birds, ultimately, again, to satisfy her neder, and two more, ultimately, again, to satisfy her obligation. So the Gemara says, v'chatos achos. Ben Azai says, no, base chatos. Ben Azai says, ultimately, again, two chatos. Rabbi, now understand, the reason why all of these, why are all these variations being brought? All of this is being brought as a challenge to Rabbi Yeshua. Because essentially, here's the point to remember. If Rabbi Yeshua is correct, all of these numbers should be less. The makeup karbanos should be less. Why? Because even if you're messing up your ola, it should at least do what? Count as your chatos. That's the underlying question of all this, and that is not happening in any of these cases. In all of these cases, when you mess up your ola and you're offering your pillow, it's not counting, which clearly is a question against Rabbi Yeshua. So the Bryce ends off, Rabbi, it's actually very interesting. Rabbi Yeshua, Zerusha Amru, this is what people mean when they say, this is just a seemingly unrelated statement. Kishu chai kolo echad, when it's alive, it makes one sound. Kishu meis kolo zayin. And when it's shechted, ultimately, again, it makes seven sounds. By the way, what does that mean? This is, by the way, is an unrelated statement, but just quite interesting. If you look at Rashi, so Rashi is all the way towards the bottom of the wide lines, about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, about 11 lines up from before the lines get wide, on the widest ones on the bottom. Amr Yeshua, it's actually interesting, Rashi says, Zer Sha'amru, Kishu Chai, Kolo Echa, Kishu Meis, Kolo Zayin, Hasan Mefarishla, Uba'ayel Kamari. Rabbi Yeshua is referring to a ram. So when a ram is alive, Rashi says, "Kishuhu chai, ein bo ela kol echad." Apparently, rams make one noise. I don't know. Whatever, you'll Google it, right? Whatever the ram noise is, right? They make one noise. They I don't know, whether they bark, bleat, whatever, right? Whatever it is, I don't think they bark. Okay, good. They make a noise, right? They make one noise. Kishumeis, listen to this. And ultimately, again, when the ram is shechted, this is fascinating. Meis kolo shiva, it makes seven sounds. How does it make seven sounds? Because Rabbi Yosef, listen to this. There are a variety of instruments that are made from the ram. So listen to this. The Gemara says, Ketzad, kolo shiva, beis karnosav, beis chatzotros. It's two horns. Ultimately, again, could become two trumpets, two shofros. Beis shokav, it's two thigh bones. Beis chalipin can be fashioned into flutes. Oro, litof, its hide or its skin could be made into a drum. Me'ayim, linevalim, it's ultimately, again, its stomach could be made into a lyre. Bnei me'av, it's kishkas, lekinoros, are harp strings. So we'll say, isn't that absolutely incredible? So halach alamai say again, of everything. So again, the ram that made one sound when it's alive, ultimately again can make seven sounds. Ultimately again, when it's dead. Now we'll say, by the way, what does that have to do with the entire discussion before? And so Rashi goes on. He says, v'hachinami kishenadre tchila ve'ini odas ma'pirsha lotzich aladat. Rashi essentially says what it means is like this. It's the same way that when this woman made a neder, right? Remember again, we'll say, how did this case start? This case started where a woman, Rachel, made a neder. If I give birth to a boy, I hereby take upon myself a kan. I hereby take upon myself to bring two birds, two olos. Right? Then she gives birth to a boy. So really what that should have done was what? Should have done was generated obligation for karbanos, right? Two olos, and then again another bird, a pair of achatos, and an ola. The fact that there was ambiguity ended up creating multiple more sounds. That's the nimshla. So it's just like the ram, when it's alive, right, it creates one sound, then when it's dead, it creates seven sounds. So there are certain situations in life where they start out with a certain number of sounds, meaning it's a reference to the certain number of obligations, but ultimately, again, then result in many more obligations. Incredible. So we'll say, so that's the end of that braisa. Now we'll say, I'll just point out to over here, two beautiful, incredible lessons that come out of this. So first of all, again, you see in life that when you lack expressivity, right? When you are not explicit in terms of what you want to do and what you want to accomplish, you create so much more work for yourself. Where there is ambiguity, you end up having to work so much harder in order to go ahead and accomplish your goals and your tasks. When you are explicit about what you want to do, and you have an explicit plan for how to execute those goals and aspirations, the job gets done. Again, not always, but you have a much greater statistical probability of getting it done. But when you are ambiguous about what you want to accomplish, when you don't have an explicit life plan, it is so much harder to get to your intended destination. That's this case. What's happening over here? Rachel's not explicit. The Kohen's not explicit. No one knows what's happening. So you can get the job done. But what started out as four birds, what should have been able to get done with four birds, ultimately takes so much more because no one is clear. No one has clarity of intention about what they want to do. If you want to accomplish things in life, have clarity of intent. Know what you want, know what your vision is, and create an explicit plan for how to get there. Rabosai, what a lesson to learn on Rosh Chodesh. What a lesson to learn on Rosh Chodesh. There's a new month ahead of us. There's untold possibilities that could materialize. But if you want to maximize this month and get the maximum results from this month, make a plan. Make a plan and be explicit into what you want to get for yourself from this month. Because if there's no plan, there's ambiguity. And when there's ambiguity, you may still end up reaching your goals, but it's going to take a lot more time, a lot more effort, and a lot more birds. Incredible. All right, well, let's go back to it. So it says the Gemara. Again, remember, what's the point of all of this? The point of all of this is that clearly we're not accepting Rabbi Yoshua. Because according to Rabbi Yoshua, in all of these cases where halacha l'maaseh, again, you messed up bird offerings, and you went ahead and you offered up more birds. You offered up, let's say, olos underneath, right? Lemata mechota sikra. L'maisa, you should still be yotze for a chatos. That's not happening in any of these cases. To which the Gemara says, Emer d'am Rabbi Yoshua, lafuke mide me'ila. This is fascinating. So I'll say, so now the Gemara reframes this. This whole time, we've been operating with the following idea. That when Rabbi Yoshua's shita? What's the shita? That halacha l'maisa, if you mess up a bird ola, right? You mess up an ola sa'of, and what do? You offer it again. You offer it lamata, right? You go ahead and you offer it lamata mechota sikra. You go ahead and you do it. Essentially, the only thing you're doing for an ola is what? L'shem ola. Everything else, procedurally, blood application-wise, is being done like a chatos. What does Rabbi Yoshua say? What does he say? It becomes a chatos. Sushimura says, maybe that's not what he meant. Right? Maybe what he meant is like this. It doesn't actually become a chatos, like to satisfy a chatos obligation. That's not what it means. Rather, what does he mean that it becomes a chatos? It's not subject to me'ilah. But remember again, hearkening back to yesterday's daf. It's been a while since I said hearkening, right? So hearkening back to yesterday's daf. So if you remember again, Rabosai, what's the chiluk, major chiluk between chatos and ola? An ola is always subject to me'ila. Why is an ola always subject to me'ila? A little chazara, why? Why? Because it never has a shas heter. Remember again, if a karban is never permissible to someone, then it always remains in a state of me'ila. Chatos, because it is consumed by Kohanim, ultimately is no longer subject to me'ila. So maybe what Rabbi Yoshua means is like this. If you take an ola sa'of and you mess it up, and essentially you totally offer it up like a chatos, if that's what you do, then in Achinami, again, it doesn't become a chatos, because you can't transform an ola into a chatos. But what it does do is, it's no longer subject to me'ila. You've repurposed it as a chatos in that it's not subject to me'ila, like a chatos. But it's not a chatos. You can't trade. No one says that you could transform an ola into a chatos. Incredible. So even though Rabbi Yeshua lafugim midim me'ila lemeisikle lechova mi'amar, ultimately again, would Rabbi Yeshua actually say that it could actually turn into the obligation of your chatos? Absolutely not. So I will say, therefore, the Gemara kind of reframes this entire discussion. Now, I will say, interestingly enough, halacha l'maisa, how do we paskin? So the Gemara says like this. So first of all, there are two piskei halacha over here. The first is in the halachos of psuli hamukdashin. So again, this is Rambam Parak Zayin halacha Vav. Listen to this. So we'll say, so specifically, we're trying to figure out over here, what happens in this ola sa'of case? Because this is really important. Let's say again, I offered up the Kohen offers up the ola sa'of and he messes it up. Remember again, we'll say, quick chazara, ola sa'of, how do you offer it? How is Malika done? Malika? Two simanim, ultimately head detached, Blood applied, lamala, above, right? Good. Now what happens? Now burnt, right? And then obviously there's more to it. Body and head, salted separately, burned separately, totally burnt on the mizbeach. Good. So now, this is our case. What happens if you messed it up? Kohen messed it up. So he did ola sa'of, it's ola sa'of, but he did everything like a chatos. What is the status of that karma? So watch this. Rambam says, v'chein, here it is. Ol Asa'ov she'asa lamata, if you took an Ol Asa'ov and you did the entire service lamata, afilu mavak simen echa lamata v'simen echa lamala, psula. Bein shemalko kumalikas ola, bein she'asa kemaisechatas, bein she'asa tzaroa, say that I'm a paskins, it's puzzle. Doesn't work. It does not work, which seemingly rejects the view of Rabbi Yoshua. So therefore, I will say, Allah alamaisa, if you mess up an Ol Asa'ov and you do any part of it lamata, you're done. You're done. It's an invalid karban. What about Me'ila? So what's this? Listen to this. So the Rambam says, Kolchatas, this is in Hilchos Me'ila, Parakim Allah Chazayin, Kolchatas olas of Shinifsla b'shinu asiyasa, b'shinu imakam asiyasa, mo'olin ba, chutz me'olas ha'ov shenimlak lamata, kimalikas chatas l'shem chatas, sha'afa pishla also l'baylan l'shem chova, ein mo'olin ba. So what's this? Now watch this. So in fact, amazingly enough, we do accept the final version of Rabbi Yoshua. So watch this. So this is how, this is good to know. This is halacha lemaisa. So halacha lemaisa, if the Kohen goes ahead and takes an Ol Asa'ov and essentially messes it up by doing the entire service like a chatos, what is the halacha? So halacha number one is the karban does not work. The karban is invalid. But, however, it is not subject to me'ila. Not subject to me'ila. Salacha lemaisa, we actually accept the final version of Rabbi Yoshua. Then when Rabbi Yoshua says that it becomes a chatos, it doesn't really mean it becomes a chatos. Rather, it becomes a chatos in that it is not subject to me'ila. Incredible. All right, Rabbi, say new Mishnah. This is actually all great Mishnah. So this is really exciting. Says the Mishnah, Kala psulin shemalku melikasa psula. Anyone who is pasul, who does malika, his malika is invalid. I will say now, Rashi says over here, Begimara pligi kala suyemai. The Gemara is going to discuss who are we talking about over here, right? In other words, who ultimately, again, are we talking about in terms of being apostle? Who are the people who are psulin? So the Gemara says next, Veinu atame beis ablia. As we said before, halacha lemaisa, and the Gemara says, as we saw before, that whenever you do a malika, ultimately, again, essentially says that it's no longer a nevela, right? So even if you have a malika that does not work for karbanic purposes, malika always works for tuma purposes. So again, so two halachas over here. Number one, if someone who is pasul did malika, so the malika is sacrificially invalid. What the Mishnah seems to be saying is that even with a sacrificially invalid malika, halacha lemaisa, again, the animal, the bird is not a nevela, and therefore halacha lemaisa, ultimately again is, and therefore there's no tumas nevela. Good. Next, so what's some other cases? Really interesting. Malak bismal o balayla. So let's say the Kohen did malika with his left hand, or he did malika at night, or shachat chulin bifnim v'kachim b'chutz, or he shechted chulin inside of the Beis HaMikdash, or kachim outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say in all of these cases, and again, we're talking over here exclusively in the world of bird offerings. That's what we're talking about over here. So what's the halacha? Eina metames bebeis hablia. So we'll say, what we're going to see is, interestingly enough, in all of these cases, these are cases of malika that is sacrificially invalid. But essentially what we are continuing to see is, even in a case where the malika is sacrificially invalid, it still works as a form of shechita, ultimately, again, to prevent the animal from conveying tumas nevela. So in all of these cases, so again, we're going to learn all of this, but you can't do malika with your left hand. You can't do malika at night. You can't shecht chulin on the inside of the Beis HaMikdash, nor can you shecht kachim outside of the Beis HaMikdash. But in all of these cases, if you did malika with any of these bird offerings, halacha lemaisa, the malika is sacrificially invalid, but it will work to prevent the bird from becoming an avela and therefore conveying tuma. Next, malak besakin. What happens if you did malika with a knife? Right, you did malika with a knife. Obviously, malika is not done with a knife. Malika is done with a nail. So you did malika with your knife, or malak chulin bifnim bekachim bechutz, or you did malika ultimately again on chulin inside the Beis HaMikdash, or kachim outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say, or amud beis, or Torin shelo egiyas manon, b'nei yona shavras manon, or ultimately again, you shechted pigeons that were too young, or turtle doves that were too old. And Rashi points out over here, by the way, Rabbi say, how do you know? Here's what's interesting. Look at Rashi. Tap Rashi, Samech Chesmavei 68b. Rashi says, Einon Torin Shelo Yiz Manon, Ubnei Yonah Sha'avras Manon, Einon Ru'uyin Lekarban, Vahavalu Kimalikas Chulin. So Rabbi says, obviously, if Halach Lamaisa, the birds aged out, right, either are too young, too old, then Halach Lamaisa, again, it's no longer sacrificially valid. It's just like Shechit of Chulin. Rashi says, Rabbi, the Sanya Ba'akol Shoftin, Torin Gidolim Velo Kitanim, Bnei Yonah Kitanim Velo Gidolim. So when it comes to the pigeons, they have to be older and not young. When it comes to the turtle doves, they have to be young and not too old. So here's what's interesting. When it comes to the birds, the Torah doesn't give an explicit age, which is fascinating. So we learn this out. So when are pigeons going to be kosher? Mishias hivu. Apparently when their feathers become like a golden color. So when the feathers become a golden color, that's ultimately, again, when they're of the right age. They must have been a yona psulim. And when will turtle doves be possible? Mishiatzivu notza musheva shesav tzavar. When their neck feathers become golden or become yellow, right? Become golden. That's when they age out. Okay, more about that later. Back to the Gemara. Or shiav shagapa, if a bird has a withered wing. So some type of mum like that, so if it has a withered wing, or shenismis ena, or it has a blinded eye. So these are all mumim. Shenikta aragla, or ultimately again that its foot is cut off. In all of these cases, Rabosai, even if you did malika, what's the halacha? Metame bebeis habliya. The bird is still considered to be an avela and therefore conveys tumah. Now again, Rabosai, we keep seeing this again. Birds convey tumah in a different kind of way than animals, right? An animal mavela, an animal carcass, conveys tumah how? Maga masa. Touching it, carrying it. Interestingly enough, a bird nevela only conveys tumah bebeis habliya, when you're swallowing it. Okay, so there I will say, here's something very interesting. So up until now, the Mishnah was dealing with cases where even though the carbon itself was invalid, the malika worked ultimately to remove nevela status. In these last cases, the Mishnah is saying that ultimately, again, malika does not work to remove nevela status, and the animal remains a nevela. Right? So the Gemara says, so now the Gemara says, how do you know which is which? Zeaklal, here it is. So what does this mean? Anything whose invalidation is inside of the Beis HaMikdash, ultimately again, the Malika will work to remove Nevela status. Now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Kol shepisula bakodesh, that's Rashi in the Mishnah, Sheba la'azara ba'akshera v'nifsula. So here's the rule. Anytime a bird is brought to the Beis HaMikdash, and the bird itself is absolutely sacrificially fit, but then something happens procedurally to render the bird invalid, the malika will work to remove nevela status. Right? So you hear this again? Anytime the bird comes to the Beis HaMikdash and is sacrificially fit, but then something happened procedurally to invalidate the bird, the malika, although sacrificially invalid, will work to remove nevela status. However, the Gemara says, Lo haya pesula bakodesh. But if by the time the bird came to the Beis HaMikdash, it was already sacrificially unfit, then ultimately, then the Malika does not work to go ahead and remove its Nevela status. Let me just illustrate this with a very simple case, right? And I bring the bird to the Beis HaMikdash, and the bird is missing a wing. So remember again, or I should say its eye is blind. Let's use the case of Mishnah. Its eye is blinded. That bird is already sacrificially unfit. It's a balmum. So because it's sacrificially unfit, the malika is meaningless in every way. And therefore, again, when that bird dies, it is an avela and will convey tumah. Contrast that with the case of where the kohen does malika with the left hand. Now, apparently, we're just introduced to this, but apparently malika with the left hand doesn't work. So let's say, again, the kohen does malika with the left hand. So we'll say, so what happened over there? That's a procedural flaw. That's a procedural flaw. The bird was absolutely fit for sacrificial service. That was a procedural flaw. In that case, although the malika is sacrificially invalid, the malika will work to go ahead and what? Remove ultimately tumas nadela. Fascinating distinction. Incredible. Says the Gemara. Let's go. So Amarav. So it was really interesting because this, as opposed to the previous sugyas, where we were much more focused on the actual like procedures of going ahead and like where the carbon was done, this is very interesting because this is actually getting into the actual procedures themselves. How do they get done? So Rav says like this, small valayla imatam v'sabliya. Ultimately, again, if the kohen is very interesting, if the kohen goes ahead and does malika with his left hand, or he does it at night. So we'll say, so by the way, so remember, these are two invalidations by malika. So what's the halacha? In matam be'sabliya. So the bird does not convey tumas nevela. So remember again, in matam be'sabliya is another way of saying, although the malika is sacrificially invalid, halacha lamaisa, it works so as to remove tumas nevela. Okay. On the other hand, zar v'sakin, matam be'sabliya, if a non-kohen does malika, or if malika is done with a knife, ultimately, again, the bird is considered to be an avela, and therefore, again, will convey tuma. So, we'll say, see now, the Gemara is going to ask, I don't understand. Maishna small, this they actually, so we'll say, so why is that? So, we'll say, this is actually very interesting, and this is a little bit different than what the Mishnah is saying. So, you hear this? Rav says, if you do malika, either again with your left hand or at night, although it is sacrificially invalid, the malika works to remove tumas nevela. If on the other hand, a non-coin zar, or malika is done with a knife, the malika is totally irrelevant and doesn't even work to remove tumas nevela. So the Gemara says, why is that? Like maishna, what's the distinction? So maishna, listen to this. Maishna small, this the echshev yom kippurim. Because we both say, why is it that if the coin does it with his left hand, that still it works to remove tumas nevela? Because interestingly enough, the left, using your left hand, is not totally foreign and alien to sacrificial service. When does the kohen use his left hand? On Yom Kippur. We'll say, what does he use his left hand for Yom Kippur? Look at Rashi. Rashi's right across. Yom Kippurim. Natal as hamachta b'yemino b'yasakaf b'smolo. So we'll listen to this. On Yom Kippur, remember again, as part of the Ketores offering, there is a point in time where the kohen is holding the shovel, or the fire pan, you know, with the coals in his right hand, and is holding the ladle, right, with the Ketores in his left hand. So what do you see from here? You see from here that the left hand, is sometimes used as part of sacrificial service. So granted, malika with the left hand is an invalid malika, but there's a quasi-validity to it enough to say that the malika at least will go ahead and remove nevela status. Why? Because the left is not totally foreign. It's not totally foreign to sacrificial service. Laila, nighttime as well, Rashi points out over here, even though there is no sacrificial service at night in the Beis HaMikdash, what do you do at night? You burn leftover fats and limbs. So because left and night are not totally foreign to sacrificial service, therefore if you did malika with your left hand or at night, although it is sacrificially invalid, the malika at least is meaningful enough in that it will remove nevela status. On the other hand, Zar, 1 second, Marcel, 1 second. So by Zar also. So now, on the other hand, what did Rav say? Rav said that if a non-coin does malika, so the malika is so invalid that it doesn't even help to remove nevela status. 1 second. Zar nami is the echsher b'shchita. But a zar, non-coin, is also involved in avoda to a certain degree, because what could a non-coin do? Shchita. He could shecht karbanos. So most of you remember, again, this is reminiscent. We actually had this sugi before, to which the Gemara says, no, shchita lav avodahi. Shchita is not a form of avoda. Shchita is not a form of avoda. Shabbos says, so therefore, again, you can't count that. The Gemara says, 1 second, no. Shchita is not a form of avoda below. So, v'ha'amar Rabbi Zera, shchitas para bizar psula. Paraduma. If a non-kohen shechts the para aduma, ultimately, again, it's invalid. So what do you see from here? That ultimately, shchita is a form of avoda, to which the Gemara says, no, that's not a good raya. Umach, the Gemara says, v'am Rav Zera, shchitas par bizar psula, umachvi Rav Allah. And Rav mentioned, or Rav supported this by saying, Elazar v'chuka. He went out of his way to say that halacha l'maisa, the Torah says, dafka by par aduma, that it has to be done by Elazar. Actually, Rashi HaKadosh says, on that pasuk, he says, Elazar, mitzvasa b'sgan. right? That the mitzvah ultimately, again, is that the assistant Kohen Gadol does it. So you see from here, Para Aduma requires a Kohen for Shechita, and it says Chukah. Chukah means it's an everlasting statute, which means it's Ma'akeh. So what do you see from here? You see an example of where Shechita does require a Kohen, which tells me that what? Shechita is an Avodah. If Shechita is an Avodah, then Halacha L'maisa, what does that tell me? That tells me that ultimately, again, a zar is shayach to shechita. Therefore, when a zar does malika, granted, it's going to be sacrificially invalid, but it should at least work to do what? To remove the neveva status. Tosh Gemara says, no, don't bring up paraduma. Leave paraduma out of this. Shani paradum, shani para, to katshe bedek habayisi. You're wrong. You look at paraduma as a form of karbanic service. Remember, also, we've said this many times. Paraduma is not a karban. Like, what's the proof that paraduma is not a carbon? What's the proof? It's down outside of the base of Mikdash, right? If it was a carbon, you can't, that's called shchutei chutz. You can't offer up carbonos outside of the base of Mikdash. So halacha l'maisa, again, halacha l'maisa, it's clear that paraduma is not, it's interesting. The Gemara says it is not a carbon, rather it's what we call kotshe bedek habayis, which actually means, fascinatingly enough, that paraduma has financial sanctity. So therefore, you can't bring any raya from it. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, but all the more so. V'lo kol d'cheinu. T'kotche b'edek habayisu. I'm sorry. V'lo kol d'chein. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, give me k'cha v'chomer. Kotche b'edek habayis bo kuhuna. Kotche mizbeach mi boi. If kotche b'edek habayis, something with financial sanctity, ultimately, again, requires a coin, then ultimately, certainly actual kabanos should require a coin for shechita as well. Amar Rav Shisha, b'rei dravidi, not necessarily. I'll tell you why. Midi tahava amaros negoim. The lav avoda ubay kuhuna. I'll give you a good proof. The proof to this is maros negoim. In other words, just what the Gemara is suggesting is like this. The argument the Gemara is advancing is, if something requires a kohen, by definition, it's a form of avoda. To which the Gemara says, I'm going to show you that is an incorrect assertion. Look at maros negoim. What's maros negoim? Again, saras. I will say again, a person presents with saras. Who do they have to go to? A kohen. And the only person who could decide on saras ultimately, again, is a kohen. So what do you see from here? Just because something requires a kohen doesn't automatically mean that it is a form of avoda. The Gemara says, v'neilif mi bama. Why don't we learn everything out from a bama? And I will say, and I remember again, look at Rashi, v'neilif mi bama, shazar kasher bazel limlok ofos lechatchila de'ein kihun babama. So what's the word from a bama? Remember again, what's the halacha by a bama? A non-kohen zar is permitted to do avoda on a bama as well. So we will say, what do you see from here? We will say, remember, what are we looking for? What are we looking for? Or we're looking for, Rav advances this idea that Allah l'maisa, if you did malika with your left hand, or you did malika at night, as much as it's sacrificially invalid, ultimately, again, the malika at least works to remove nevela status. Why? What's his logic? Because again, left and night are not foreign to sacrificial service. Left Yom Kippur, night burning of fats and limbs. But yet he says, if a non-Kohen went ahead and did Malika, it doesn't do anything, even to remove the veil. Gemara says, why not? A zar is also not totally alien to Avodah. So first of all, again, Shechita is Ksheira Bizar. So the Gemara rejects that. Shechita is not an Avodah. Okay, get rid of that. Fine. First, the Gemara says, what about by a bama? We saw both, remember again, what's a bama? A bama is a personal karban. What was the halacha by bamas? Ultimately, again, that the halacha by bamas ultimately was that anyone could offer it up. So why not go ahead and learn out from a bama that's just like the zar could go ahead and do avoda, right? Literally, again, a non-kohen, there's no kohanim by bamas. Anyone could offer karbanas by bamas. So just say, like, anyone could offer karbanas by bamas. So everyone's going to agree that, of course, the malika of a zar doesn't work, but it should at least work to say that what? That it removes nevela, to which the Gemara says, mi bama lo yalef. We don't learn anything out from bama. In general, we don't learn out halachas from bama. So again, I'm gonna pause over here because I just want to end off with a little vart from the parsha. But again, that's kind of where we're ending off. Oh, actually, no. Let me just finish up quickly. Velo the Gemara says, because we'll just get to Rabbi Yochanan. Velo, is that true? Ultimately, again, that we don't learn out from a bama. Vatanya minayin liyotzei shim alalo yarad. How do we know? Oh, then halacha l'maisa, if you have a sacrificial limb that was taken outside of the Beis Hamikdash, that's yotzei. Take it out of the Beis. That you're not allowed to put that on the mizbeach. But if you put it on the mizbeach, that you don't take it off. How do we know that? Shariyotze kasha bebama. Because we'll say, again, we learn that from a bama. A bama ultimately is down outside of the Beis Hamikdash. And yet, again, if you put it on the mizbeach, you're allowed to go ahead and keep it there. It's an interesting comparison. So too, again, if you have a piece of sacrificial limb that was taken out of the Beis HaMikdash, although you shouldn't put it on the Mizbeach, ultimately, again, if you do, halacha l'maisa, again, you don't have to take it down. So you see, we do learn from Bama, to which the Gemara says, Tana azos Torah sa'ola samichlei. That's actually not what we're learning now from. The Gemara learns that from, we actually saw this before, zos Torah ha'ola. It's an ola. Once it's an ola, what does that teach us? That although if you have an invalid sacrificial part that is not supposed to be put on the Mizbeach, but you did anyway, you don't take it down. So bottom line, we don't go ahead and learn from Bama. Shavuot says, so bottom line, what we are left with is this position of Rav, right? And Rav, halacha l'maisa, holds that, again, if you did Malika with your left hand or at night, although it's sacrificially invalid, ultimately, again, it works to remove Nevela status. But if a non-coin did Malika, or if he did it with a knife, that is totally invalid, is not only sacrificially invalid, but also, again, doesn't even count to go ahead and remove Tumas Nevela. Gemara question Rav's whole idea, ultimately, again, of Zarin kind of left that. In Meres Hashem, in tomorrow's daf, we will continue with the position, ultimately, again, of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is going to go ahead and disagree with Rav. I'll just read it to you. Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Zar ein metame abeis habliya, sakin metame abeis habliya. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rav regarding Zar. Rabbi Yochanan says, if a non-kohen does malika, halacha lemaisa, again, it works to remove tumas nevela. However, again, if you did it with a knife, everyone agrees that a knife will not work to remove Tumas Nevela. So both say, so it turns out that if a Zar does Malika, Machlokis Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, ultimately, again, in terms of the impact of if a Zar does Malika, everyone agrees that, of course, it is sacrificially invalid, but does it work to go ahead and remove Tumas Nevela? That ultimately, again, is subject to Machlokis. So both say, 1 minute Vart before we have to dive in. Remember again, this is the parasha where Halacha L'maaseh Yaakov Yitzchak Avinu gives brachas to his sons. When Rivka is pregnant, so by Srotas to Abban and Bekirba, ultimately again the children are struggling inside of her. She goes to find out what is happening over here. So she is told Shnei Goyim Bevitneich. There are two different nations in your womb. And interestingly enough, she is told about these two nations, V'Rav Ya'avod Tsair. Rav Yavotzar, which means, how do we translate that? The older one will ultimately come to serve the younger one. The older one, Esav, ultimately again will come to serve the young one. She's told two nations, they will not be on equal footing. The older one ultimately again will become subservient to the younger one. Yet Esav will become subservient ultimately to Yaakov. The great tzaddik, Rav Avram Yaakov of Sadigura, who was one of the sons of the Heilig Originer, says something so beautiful. He says, in this phrase, is such a mantra for a successful living. V'rav ya'avod tsa'ir. He says, Rav ya'avod, work very hard tsa'ir when you're young. Work very hard when you're young. If you put in the effort when you're young, you will reap the benefits ultimately when you're older. Now you might be thinking to yourself, Shkoyach. Rebbe, where were you 30 years ago? Here's the beautiful thing. In general, when it comes to youth is not looked at in a linear fashion. Youth is looked at in a daily fashion. When we wake up in the morning, there is a rebirth. Every single morning is a rebirth, which means every single morning is a brand new world. And therefore, when you are reborn each and every day, there is a decision one has to make. How much effort am I going to expend to maximize the day? This is a new unit of life, not a continuation of what was before. Something totally new. And alachas kama v'kama, when that new morning also begins on a Rosh Chodesh. And alachas kama v'kama, when that new morning is on a Rosh Chodesh, is on an Erev Shabbos. So much newness, so much haschala. And the Rebbe of Sadigura tells us, there's one simple mantra for success in this month. V'rav Ya'avod Tsa'ir. Every single morning when you start the day, make a promise to work hard. And if we make this a month of hard working mornings, then in Meretz Hashem, there is no telling what we could accomplish. There is no telling the light that we could generate. And there is no telling the nisim and the flows we'll be zochei Meretz Hashem to receive during this holy month of Kislev, a good Shabbos. Same, so yeah, this is the part I didn't get to with Rav Tzadik, but yes, same thing.